This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
He also has to wait for the poem to happen. I mean, the drugs aren't the poem, the drugs are having an area of experience.
Yeah.
And just as the field will return anything that you've experienced.
Well, take this along with having an area of experience, too. I mean, the point is that about those things, you know, around the immigration or whatever, there's a satisfying writer's senses. I mean, the form sense that Stephen Gardner talks about, that makes you feel like when he's painting, that you need to. You see it from something dark and you see something brighter there. And it's also the length of the sentence that, of course, teaching it as an abstract thing is very something obscene about that. But it really, and of course, it's pointing out that there are these ways to satisfy one's senses, one's ears.
Yes, I didn't mean that you don't teach it. I did mean that you don't just make it has no existence of itself. It is again to the through the principle.
Yeah, but
I keep wanting to say something crass and Canadian, and I think it fits this, is you talk about drugs so easily, but where do you come by the money? And if you have to come by the money, you're involved with all that's out there, and you're communicating like everything only somewhere else.
You might as well be on the installment plan for a piano.
It may be shut.
Or even if you didn't have to come by the money, you have to come by the drug. That's the other thing. You don't really have to come by the imagination.
So it's as though that sociological kind of communication absorbs all your communication, and you go mute when you get into the other universe. Right?
But we're not talking about drugs.
Is that there isn't there's an experience that you've had, and then you want to put it into words. That there is a real synthesis of the experience and the words. That is to say, you have the experience in words. It immediately begins to be words. So there are some experiences equally valuable for the individual, which do not occur to him as words. He doesn't, and if he tries to make a poem out of such an experience, he may make a competent poem, you know, if you know something about writing. It may not be bad, but it won't be a real S poem. And the poems which are S poems are those where there wasn't any space between the experience and the words. I don't mean to say that, you know, you wrote the poem in 5 minutes, but something of your realization of the experience. The thing happens, and you are involved in it happening, and perhaps it goes on happening in you for weeks. I mean, the gong goes bong, and you hear it, but you continue hearing it within yourself after the even the echo of it will stop, but it's continuing to echo in you, and you haven't completed your experience of this until it has issues as words. It's all one thing. There isn't any scene there.
Well, that's
if
that's
you
that's
write about it,
that's
cool. Me,
No future. No future. There's no future in this world.
I would like to at least
how do you know? Have you been both?
Yes, have you been both?
John is the Yes. Well, I was struck by that. Eberhard, in conversation a couple of years ago, said that the most intense experience he'd ever got, let's say, from the context of poetry, was hearing, and must have been Yevtushenko and Voznesensky, reading their poems at the Library of Congress, some party involved with that, in that place.
And then Pound had much earlier said that hearing Tagore read in Bengali, but there he said that what he got was the sense that Tagore was a poet when he didn't, thing he heard, and it's not really...
I think it's interesting because it makes very clear the context of poetry as
how much is the vowel side of that first day.
I was interested, but if you say seeing the person speaking.
Oh, goodness, yes, when I saw what it is.
You know that story? But once I understand it, that's different. No. I understand.
I'd like to pose a picture, though, against the one that has been raised now, in which, for instance, you have an experience and you translate it into language, but any of you, I've actually said this so many times, can I say it fresh? For me, the poem is the time, and also I find so that the poem, the thing made in language, being in language is the thing I enjoy, and it is actually to be able to live there, and I do not find that ever. The times when I get hung up and I'm not with it, yes, then I keep thinking I'm trying, in order to get in it, no door will open and I can't live in the language, so I will make my way by some emotion I think is strong and never works. I find myself, like you find yourself in a dream, this is like forcing yourself to dream, finally it doesn't work, and dreams really come only au naturel. When I said something about resisting another world, there's a little joke to it, because the language itself is one of our other worlds. And like dreams, there are two other worlds in which I constantly am. The dream is an other world, and the language itself is an other world. And your picture of Canadian what here is actually the problem really isn't between a Canadian and American, nor even the one that seems to be there between a person speaking English and a person writing English and a person writing Chinese. All you have to do, evidently, to make this migration into an entirely different mind and experience, the one that's locked in this thing called Chinese, is to get the use of these integers. Now, the other thing that does operate, that I'm sure, when you're writing with them, you have to call on the earliest things and the languages you were surrounded with. Dave, what you said about H.D.'s daughter and Pound's daughter not being able to write because they had been surrounded by other languages when they were children, and so they have a kind of not indecision about what will I use in this.
Sure.
I'm sure we are born into the language and surrounded by it, and we took a whole part of our being, a whole part of what we are exists in it, so the communication really is how do I return to it, and the problem that it can be posed by getting an experience over into it. No, things happen in language, and the strange thing for me is that things that happened to people centuries ago, things that happened to people that are clearly entirely different from me, will be so vivid to me and happen in me when I read them. Now, so I'm always at a loss when somebody says there's no bridge. I have lived on the bridge until I really feel that I am myself only existed as I have derived my being from what is lost in those languages. But I mean my language being, obviously, I'm sitting here, another guy. And that was the meat being you talked about, the one that has also come down derived from human beings. This thing you think is a physical reality was derived in the same sense.
This thing Robert now mentions of the issue of what happens when one thinks of an alternate of two words as possible for the same issue. When that issue of choice occurs, there again I personally become very balked. In other words, if I can choose, then there's no point in the choice. Equally, I've seen my own circumstances with apropos poems where I found that the habits of a formal or structural sense began to obliterate any occasion of a free issue, of freedom from the intention or freedom from the habits of this order of form. So that in this novel, I found I didn't know how to write a novel, and I had no sense of what a novel was except from, say, reading other people's novels, but that sense of reality seemed to me arbitrarily circumscribed, I mean arbitrarily chosen, as opposed to lived. And so anyhow, I found that in writing this book, I got very quickly, after about the first four chapters, and it becomes marked in the actual character of the book, after the first four chapters, I had no sense of what I was saying, literally. I had I remember at one point in the writing of the book, when I was halfway through, I had, we were in New York, and I was talking to the editors at the publishers, and they asked me very, you know, decently what I thought now was going to happen. And I was scared because I depended upon them for their interest at that point, and I didn't know what was going to happen. I found I didn't know what was going to happen at all. I mean, I didn't know what I'd written. I'd forgotten. In other words, the curious problem in a novel is you forget what you've said completely. And you can't literally reread the entire book at every point in order to remember it. And you can't make notes as to what you are saying, so all you are doing is saying something. And so, and then after the initial fear of saying the wrong thing passes, you literally are saying what comes into your head as you arrive at the occasion of saying something. I mean, I found that I got all the, and that's why it was frankly useful for me. I saw God or something, but the, because I completely got beyond any issue of my own intention. Or rather, even my intention could occur here.
Yes, that novel's poem by intent, because I think, we are having a very difficult word, this word intention.
Intent.
Because it's hidden with those Latin things. No, I meant, Charles says we got to go to the roots, and I have not got a dictionary here, so I'm really frustrated. All of us are able to move it around because we're not looking at it, this word intention, and intended.
Well, look, this is what I was trying to say earlier, that when I found myself circumscribed by what I wanted to do, I mean completely, so that I couldn't do anything else, then I got nervous. And I, as we were talking the other evening, Robert and Alan and I were talking after Alan's reading, and Robert characterized the sense of writing that I'd come to as I'd burn my bridges. I mean, the sense that once I satisfy a sense of a formal possibility in writing, I can't return to it. I mean, I can't go backwards because I find that I can't write it. I mean, I can't write what I've written. I have a great horror of not repetition, of being boring, but I have a great horror of an occasion that isn't necessary. think about what we're doing now. I don't know. See, so therefore I can be here. For a while.
But there is no free association in your novel at all.
Well, to me, it's all, I wrote it, it's all free
association.
Yeah, but
it's not... Well, my sense of reading was that it was the ultimate in articulation. I mean, so articulated that he could do away with those awful things we use when we don't articulate, which is it's likely that strings to things to make them look like they're connected when we haven't articulated.
Let me see if I can give a sense of it. It's as though you were in a situation in which you could not apprehend any continuity or any possibility beyond that immediately offered in the actual words. I was talking with Bill Hawkins and the other evening, and the sense I had of not wanting to have any arrogation other than what, or any kind of attachment to person. That is, I don't want to be, we were talking about the issue of social writing. As it came to, we were talking about Irving Layton. This was not a criticism of him. We were trying to understand the context in which he is writing. And also with Lawrence Ferlinghetti, for example, where there is a context of audience deliberately concerned in the poem. Now, this, I don't see this as quote good or bad, this is immaterial to me as a judgment. But I was trying to describe a sense of writing in which the living brain, for example, would be the only context of reality that was primary. Then the reader as issue from that. as opposed to this is a good book on the brain. You see where the person is involved with the word the living brain in that sense. Yeah. That would be secondary. Well, I wasn't trying to do it. No, just wait a minute. I was trying to think of a sense of where I was in this kind of circumstance. It was like being swimming. I was doing everything I could do. I was doing literally everything I could do. I was doing. And I was articulating in that sense with the most intense consciousness I could muster. But then again, you see, at times I'd grow tired or different. I found that I could move with the context of feeling. I mean, that is, I could feel tired in the writing. I could feel exalted in the happy in the writing. But at the same time, all I could do was what I could do at that moment. I was articulate to that extent. I was doing everything I could do in reference to each word as I wrote it. And this was literal. I mean, and all the schema I had for the book was five chapters, one part, and four parts. Five chapters to a part, and there would be four parts. Because I remember Mike Umake in conversation said that these particular editors for whom we work have like books that are roughly 200 pages. I didn't even know what 200 pages would be in terms of words. I mean, how many texts to a bushel or this sort of thing? It became a translation of that editor, which, that's like cut up, you see. If something cuts off, for example, after you teach for a time, you know in 40 minutes it's done automatically as a measure. Yeah, well, I guess that's what I was trying to do.
Well, one thing you'll find when you read the novel, just if you have a kind of statement to be. It is accurate. The other thing that Bob is saying is that he did not. That he discovered the form as he goes in the novel, so that he has very simple solutions that you would suddenly realize, of course he's been familiar with, because they are the novel. This book, for instance, is not experimental in that sense.
No.
It is the novel, and the composition is like the composition that Denise was comparing with in painting. You actually, one of the things that can happen in painting is that you feel it's wrong here, and you know very well it must be wrong everywhere else.
Yes.
The place where you do feel it's wrong is, after all, the only place. No, but the place you do feel it's wrong is the only one you're looking at. And then you'd better look everywhere else, but the thing that happens in the novel, he doesn't have to look everywhere else because he's taking care of this right there. And then the plot, the other little thing, he has thematic composition in it, a thing I even question myself. It is one of those things that can become habitual. But he swings it so far out that it's actually a delight. I mean, when I talk about my being overloaded, his circuits are at least that much beyond that I am absolutely delighted to find out that this is preserved. The crow, everything, and things you found in the poem, all of a sudden in the novel are everywhere. like those figures in a Miró painting or something, that when it's really real, you say, wow, I didn't think that could happen again. I mean, how could he ever bring
when
that?
When Ellen read that poem on Friday, and suddenly, it seemed to me that there was a whole context of, for, what would you call it, real experience? Just experience. All experience must be real. That interested me very much. You see, my structure depended upon the being as conscious as possible at all points. Alan's moved, to my mind, into a quote, deeper, unquote, context in which that issue was no longer primary. In other words, Charles, in a book called Mayan Letters, speaks of one of the problems of pound structure for present terms lies in the fact that it is an ego structure, that it's dependent upon the ego of one man. Williams, in effect, in Patterson, tries to make purpose, and this is not an argument that this is the conscious purpose, but in any case, he attempts to think of an alternate means of structure, which is interesting. And now Ellen, I feel, is involved with the same context. What can get beyond this? That's why intention and will, volitional terms, become for me problems. I'm trying to think of a way of writing that does not depend upon my wanting to write a novel or a poem or anything of that kind. I don't think there is an ultimate structure. Charles, what do you think? This sense of town's
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's the technique for me is the conscious means of writing. That is to gain certain literal effects, alliteration, things of this sort, and reference to poetry, our conscious ability to handle these devices, or let's say to be aware of the character of language to sufficient extent to be able to create certain effects in that language would be what I consider technique. Structure is simply the system, the organizational system of the piece of writing. And what was the last one now?
Order.
That to me means simply the sequence of words as they demonstrate a relationship. Now, my point is that if all of these depend upon what I think these things are, reasonably is a limit, which may or may not prove detrimental to the actual piece of writing. In other words, Hopkins is an interesting instance because he was highly conscious of his technical aspects of his poetry, and very conscious of order and very conscious of structure. But I don't think this is what makes Hopkins' poems valid, or rather, this experience machine that Alan speaks of. In other words, it got him to the writing of the poem, obviously, or it was of use to him in writing. But I question that it is therefore of interest to all, each and every, of necessity.
There's an example of the business of technique orders, and again, this business is men have certainly wanted to overthrow and to have something happen new in the psyche, and they've always then had to lose their technique. An example would be Augustine, who said he would rather write bad Latin and be a Christian, because he found the Bible written, or was it bad Greek? It would be either between, it would be bad Greek, no, but between these two. Within 200 years of Augustine, there's not a person in Europe who can write good Latin. And you're in the Christian world. I mean, Augustine is in a world which is firmly challenged. He made a choice between a highly literate, high articulation and order, the Gnostic order that now we're interested in again, and it was also highly literate, and he made a choice against it for illiterate Christianity, and because only, I mean, there are, and this may be part of what's happening, already painting techniques have been almost totally lost. And in the same period that they lost the technique of Latin and Greek, they lost the technique of the arches, another one they lost in that period, so that by the time you come to the same period when they no longer could write good Latin, they didn't know what an arch was at all. They had to pick up a building and place it in one and along another. But this is an intensely Christian period. It is living as if only one thing happened, and that was Christ. And consequently, these techniques were not, on one hand, these techniques were not interesting. They were let go. On the other hand, they were evidently deliberately fought against, because along with the highly developed and sophisticated art forms, when you go to the catacombs, to the real place where the holy painting, which always really matters, is being done, the scrawl was much like the children's scrawl that has been the origin of modern art, discovering the spirit again. Because there's something about technique can really become, at crises of spirit, the technique can become an obstacle, and the only way to build up another technique is actually fight the thing that's built up. I think in the place in the Maximus where you see this drive that there must be a new spirit, and this is the one that wants drugs, that does not want this world we live in. See, like I would be one of those Gnostics wanting to just go along in this old technique, this old thing, which I am and only necessary giveaway, whereas there are a lot of romping Christians around here who want the new thing. Now, in the Maximus, it says in a time of plenty, you have your ass out in your trousers, and the breakdown of manners, the breakdown of social techniques for how do people get together with get along without anybody being offended. Then you've got to offend, and the offenses of the Christian period are fantastic. That's why the whole Roman period end up burning them in Rome. They went, it isn't just martyrdom, just to reproduce. The offense of Christ in the first place was of this order, along with what he was. And so that there's something about technique, about the fact, the impulse that many people have today in writing, to actually break that, even if they ended up in a kind of illiterate, idiot kind of writing. And when I bear testimony, I only say I'm not one of those new people. And as I'm informed by my theosophical relatives, I never was. I never, as my aunt said, you know, if you really are going to have to go through so many more reincarnations because you cheated again. You were at one of these great times and you went on writing. I mean, you shouldn't have been a writer because you would never give the ground there. You would not. You know, you should have joined the gang with the ass out in their trousers. And here I am with a tie and a clean shirt. But on the other hand, I've done it so many times, I'm sure, in the history of mankind, that I'll still be doing it when the Raspberry Bowl is falling out for paradise. I'll be on the dock writing for the old technique.
Did you really about the barbarians and all that?
The barbarians? Oh, yes. We used to learn in medieval history when they sacked Rome, it had already been sacked by the Christians because all those Roman buildings had been dismantled to go into Christian buildings because they couldn't make the arch anymore. No, it was the barbarians. Break through. The barbarians are attractive like barbarians are today. We are also attracted to the primitive because they promise us a way of... The barbarians had the same vitality as discarding... Where are you if you discard the techniques? You are looking at how do people live without them. Both the back to soil, but also back to the thief, back to the marauder, or how does the rat live, which interests biologists. Who's going to survive the atom bombing? Will it be the cockroach? And how does he live? If I also had always lived that way, would I? There, all of these, I think, I think all of these are things of the spirit.
Well, primitive man goes to the Indian, for example. Was...
Why, like Hermes started out there. But by the way, the business of stealing is certainly there in the very first ideas. Sisney Gilgamesh does a little swiping in his time. At Black Mountain, I wrote a farce on Olson in which it was a Jack the Giant Killer, and a little boy there who was the parent of some rather pious pacifists and the Huss's little boy, he was fascinated because there was this B-4-5 fun. And like people come up and ask me, you know, who is Isis Astarte? He come up and ask, who is B-4-5-5? And I said, you don't know? Well, but this happens to be at his own household, and the parents look kind of like this. Like,
oh boy.
You can mention Spock, you can mention anything, but did you mention B-4-5-5? So I said, you don't know, I'll tell you the story. And then I suddenly realized, like, Jack the Giant Killer stole, and this little boy hears a peeking, he did? And he killed a big man? He did? And he got away with it? He did? And the parents are sitting there, they're in dire moral structure, and they have been protecting him for years against this story. And actually, B-4-5-5 is one of those little things that is below the technique. I mean, below the technique is one of those. So I think that thief there is there in the beginning of things, the fact that he steals. Oh, well, let's not worry about it. I just meant that since it was law. Oh, that when men want an arch again and go to the work of finding it, that's another story. But that it didn't just lose it. We're beginning to realize that it was took a creative effort to get into a world in which there would not be this technique. And as long as there was, evidently, at some point that craft skill went to pieces with him, disappeared within one generation or two generations. You couldn't find anybody But long before then, people ceased being interested, totally ceased being interested in that arch. It's later when they want to have one for a palace or something, and everybody else has used up those strange little things they can't figure it out.
What is it I'm saying? I mean,
in the arch there was a hidden idea, the keystone.
But I would have put it by looking at them later.
No, there's in it. As a matter of fact, I have lost that technique. I couldn't draw for you. Maybe I could. We build it with building. Our building blocks included, by the way. No, they don't. Already constructed arches, they've got them in children's building blocks, so they don't include it. It's all built up. And then also in back of this is a creative effort in which this has meaning. They can even get back to it and find out that this whole thing of the dome and the whole thing of that arch actually was so un-Christian. And wherever it appeared as in the Byzantine world, it seriously altered the whole feeling of what the... And when it reappears in the Christian world, you've got a church. You see, in this in-between thing, you have a ferment place that the Gnostics weren't going to have. They disappear along with that arch. You find out Chenobosky library disappears. The big thing about Gnostic texts is not that they were persecuted or something, but nobody would take the books out from the lending library any longer, so they buried them with them. They didn't find it couldn't have had any more readers. Oh, we won't read that old stuff. Let it go. And now why we want it again. So we find it again.
I'm afraid we'll have to stop because we're just about out of water, but my room isn't tonight.